Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And now what to do about as many as 40,000 New York City residents who were left homeless after last week's storm and others around the region. Mayor Bloomberg hopes that the 40,000 estimate for the city is the worst case scenario and that it's more like 10 or 20,000, but still a huge number in a city where housing is scarce. And many thousands more are displaced in New Jersey and on Long Island and in Connecticut. So joining us to talk about what government is doing for all these displaced people in a region newly covered in snow and what people are doing for themselves, WNYC's Cindy Rodriguez here in our studio, and from Washington, New York Times reporter Eric Lipton covering what the federal government is doing to help with housing recovery. Cindy and Eric, hello.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
And listeners, we want your calls on this. We invite your calls. Our guests won't have all the answers, but we'll have many. This won't be the only conversation we have about this. We'll stay on it through the recovery because it's such a major issue. But let's start talking about it. Call us up if you're one of the many thousands who are left homeless by the storm and tell us what you're doing. Tell us what you need and ask any questions of our guests. 646-829-3980. Call in at 646-829-3980 if you've been left homeless by the storm, 646-829-3980, or if you know someone who has been and you have a question or a comment on their behalf. And Cindy, let's start in the five boroughs. Mayor Bloomberg on Sunday said he expected about 20,000 people to need long-term shelter and that most of those were public housing residents. A day later, he seemed to think that number would be even lower. So who are we talking about, and what are the latest figures on residents who need long-term shelter?
Well, Brian, you're right. The mayor, actually, he originally had said 40,000. Then
yeah.
He started lowering the numbers.
Right.
And I think pretty consistently he's been saying that they're still trying to get a handle on that. Yesterday, when asked how many people are living in these areas where the city has been suggesting that people get out of, he said it was about 20 to 30,000. But that was really just an estimate. He said that the city went door to door and knocked on about 2,000 houses in the Rockaways, Staten Island, Breezy Point. About 50% of those people answered their doors. 50% appeared to be gone. And he said of those 50%, about half of those seemed to have serious electrical damage to their homes.
And Mayor Bloomberg appointed Brad Gare to oversee the city's replacement housing effort. He's a former federal disaster coordinator and former deputy commissioner of the city's Office of Emergency Management. What is the city saying people should do if they need long-term housing? How do they get it?
Well, I think right now everything is still sort of in these planning stages. Yesterday I was talking to a city official who said that one of the ideas, one of the population they're trying to target is people who might be, let's just say that they need a boiler or they need their electrical system fixed pretty quickly, then they could get back into their homes. So that's one idea that Brad Gare's new office would do is try to get those people up and running as quickly as possible. There's also hotel vouchers that FEMA has been giving out. I called several of these small hotels around Coney Island yesterday. They're all packed with storm victims, and they're all getting these FEMA vouchers as well.
So some of this is coming pretty quickly.
Yeah, it is. It is. The city said yesterday that the FEMA stuff is at its beginning stages. The mayor also said yesterday that trailers are something that they're looking into. They're basically looking at whatever they can at this point.
Eric Lipton, New York Times correspondent in Washington. As of Sunday, I'm seeing that almost 200,000 residents of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut had applied for disaster assistance. As of Monday, federal officials said more than 45,000 families had been approved for housing assistance, totaling more than $200 million. What will FEMA provide, and how do we qualify?
So, I mean, FEMA has sort of two ranges of assistance that it helps, that it provides in this situation. One is the immediate short-term hotel assistance that is, you know, a matter of a couple of weeks, generally at maximum, that it would provide. And there are limitations in terms of how many hotel rooms are available. And if you're, secondly, it will provide up to 18 months of assistance in renting an apartment. Although, again, for New York City, the amount that they provide is not a great deal of money in New York City rates. I mean, it works out to about $1,800 a month in assistance for a two-bedroom apartment. No, I mean, if you take what money you have on your own and then that assistance, that perhaps is enough to rent an apartment, if you can find one. That's another issue. Where can you find an available apartment in the New York metro area? So it's providing hotel rooms in the short term, if you can find one. It's providing rental assistance. And then, as you know, Cindy also mentioned, in certain circumstances, there are, you know, trailers, portable homes that homeowners who have homes could perhaps put one on their front yard while a home is being rebuilt. That's another alternative. FEMA has a lot of these trailers that it can provide.
So, Eric, do you think we're going to see FEMA trailers all over Long Island and New Jersey, like in Louisiana after Katrina?
It's up to the governors to decide whether or not they want to request those trailers, or portable, you know, homes. And I think it's extremely unlikely that there'll be these mini cities that were built in Louisiana and Mississippi, these, you know, kind of almost, I mean, trailer slums that were created and then in some cases lasted for several years. That was, something that FEMA never wants to do again. But the other alternative of having an individual homeowner with a trailer on their yard, which allows them to be right next to their property while they're renovating their existing property, that's not the worst thing.
Yeah, that's a different model of trailer than those, in effect, slums, as you say, that were created after Katrina. By the way, are there better and worse FEMA trailers? Have you seen them? Have you been in them? Are there, you know, two-bedroom and three-bedroom FEMA trailers?
Yeah, I've been in FEMA trailers, unfortunately, a bunch of times, and in covering Katrina. They were trying something they called the Katrina Cottage, which was like a sort of a mini house. The federal government after Katrina spent a lot of money on pilot projects to build these tiny houses that could be set up quickly. But so far that hasn't become a mainstream program. And it's basically just a what you see in trailer parks, those kind of small, very, very small homes. They're not very comfortable. They smell like, you know, plastic, and they're stuffy. But it's better than being homeless.
So, listeners, if you are homeless as a result of Sandy or know someone who is and you have a story to tell or a question that either of our guests, WNYC Cindy Rodriguez or Eric Lipton, covering this for the New York Times, can answer or might be able to answer, the phones are for you, 646-829-3980, 646-829-3980. And Marlene in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, I have a question mainly about public housing and what's happening there. It's becoming invisible, their situation, both in the media and from what I'm seeing in terms of dealing with it. It's beginning to feel like the poor are like Katrina victims in New Orleans. They're invisible and forgotten. I heard one report which said that NYCHA was being left to pump out the water from these buildings, and electricity couldn't be restored until after. NYCHA cannot manage the buildings in normal circumstances, so they'll be pumping next summer. There are pumping teams out in Breezy Point. I think it's part of the police department. My question is, why aren't reporters asking officials embarrassing questions about why they're not doing anything for the NYCHA people, and what can be done to get them some attention?
Marlene, thank you. And I don't know, Cindy, do you agree with the premise that reporters aren't asking government officials, or that the city, we've heard Mayor Bloomberg talk about public housing a number of times, as we've discussed, that they aren't making public housing and these possibly tens of thousands of displaced people from there a priority?
Right. Well, I know that that here we have gone to NYCHA a few times to ask them what's happening. Several of us have been in public housing developments. I was at Campos Plaza on Sunday and saw some pretty terrible conditions. No power, people dragging water up 18 flights of stairs, many seniors trapped in their apartments with no place to go. So there's certainly she's right that the NYCHA residents are definitely been very hard hit during the storm. And it's true that pumping out the water was really a problem. The mayor said, I believe yesterday or possibly the day before, that now all of the buildings have been pumped out. As of yesterday, the latest numbers were that 13,500 NYCHA residents still didn't have power. About 23,000 still didn't have heat or hot water. Red Hook, East and West Red Hook, that's one development that's really hard hit. Campos Plaza apparently did get their power back. Another Ocean Bay, I believe, in Far Rockaway is another place that's been badly damaged. So there are definitely a lot of people in public housing that are still suffering through this.
Julie in New Providence, New Jersey. You're on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. Thanks so much, Brian. I listen to your show all the time, and I really appreciate you having this show this morning.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have friends who live in Southern Ocean County, New Jersey, who are homeless now. They were renting places right on the bay, and they're just not livable anymore. And I'm wondering, is there a place or phone number where they can reach out to find temporary housing or a place to stay in that area?
Yeah, Eric, where do people start? A lot of people who haven't lived in public housing before or haven't gotten Section 8 vouchers, just not used to being dependent on the government for housing, where do they start if they're suddenly flooded out?
The first thing you should probably do is call or go online or go to one of these disaster recovery centers. It's not to be advertising for them, but it's 1-800-621-FEMA is the phone number, or 1-800-621-3362. And their website is www.disasterassistance.gov. And, you go onto that site or you make a phone call and then you register, and you are eligible as a victim for approximately $35,000, I think it is, in assistance overall from the federal government. That is for temporary housing or to make repairs to your house. Obviously, that's not a great deal of money. The idea is not to rebuild your house because you're supposed to have flood insurance to cover your home, but it's just to provide some money to help you get on your feet again.
I understand that, but if you're not a homeowner, does that $35,000 then apply if you're just renting?
If you're a renter, you're also eligible for assistance. Yeah,
you are, but it's a different number.
Okay. No, it's the same number. It's the same number.
Julie, thank you, and good luck to your friends. And Cindy, on the topic of rentals, people who are now thinking they just need to try to rent a new apartment if they're out in the private market in the city, should they go ahead and sign a lease and hope FEMA reimburses them?
I don't really have the answer to that. I would hate to give bad advice to people. I know that the FEMA assistance is slowly getting up and running, and there is the idea that you will be reimbursed if you need this emergency housing. And I know that I spoke to several people at a shelter in Brooklyn a couple of days ago who were sort of in that predicament. They had been renting basements in Coney Island. Their apartments were flooded. They went back. Their landlords are gone. They're not sure what they're going to do. But they did apply for FEMA assistance, and they were still trying to figure out whether they would get money, a hotel voucher, whether they would get money. Go and find another place to live.
Any advice for people in that situation, Eric? It's such an ambiguous one for many folks who don't know if they're going to get reimbursed, but they need a place to live right now, and what legal obligations are they getting themselves involved in if they sign a new lease without having broken the old one, but the old one is unlivable? I mean, that whole mix of things.
Yeah, I mean, FEMA has been moving pretty quickly to approve the eligibility of victims for assistance. So, I mean, it's best to get your name in that system and to ask for your approval of your eligibility before you would go and sign something like that, I would think. Because they, in cases where you live in an area that they know was flooded, they will approve it even without necessarily personally inspecting the property. If they know, for example, that you live in an area where the flooding was pretty, bad, they don't have to go and look at your individual home, but they know that whole area was swamped. So, I think it's best to register and get approval before you sign a lease.
And listeners, this segment is mostly about how to get government assistance and how to get the government to help you with programs that are on the books if you wind up homeless. We're going to talk later in the program with an insurance expert who's going to give you advice on how to deal with your insurance company, even if you're still in your home, but the tree fell on it, or you had the flood and you have the mold, whatever it is, because as you know, the insurance companies try to wriggle out of paying on these things in many, many, many different ways. So later in the show, we'll have advice for how to deal with your insurance company. But let's take another call right now. Marlene in Oceanside, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Brian, it's actually Arlene in Oceanside. And I'm having
So we're even. You got my name wrong. I got your name
right. But I have to tell you, since the storm started, we have had NPR and a little portable radio morning, noon, and night. I go to sleep with it. I wake up with it. You have been a saint for doing this.
Thank you.
We're in Oceanside, and I have no hot water, no heat, no food, no nothing. I have two blind dogs. I've been living in this house. I'm getting bronchitis. And I don't know where to get, how do I get housing? And I don't know if my insurance company is going to cover it. I don't know where to go.
Do you feel you need to leave your home, Arlene?
I'm freezing to death. I'm actually freezing to death, yes. And I'm getting sick.
Eric, what should this Long Island do?
I'm mild, and I have 4 feet of water, and I had my, it was like the Titanic in my house.
Oh my.
Everything's out on the curb.
Eric, what should this Long Islander do?
I mean, there are, you know, it's hard to know how much you've reached out to the various agencies. You know, the American Red Cross is there to provide immediate, short-term, you know, food, water, shelter if necessary.
Okay. I called FEMA. I did call FEMA, but I'm on a list, you know?
On a list. So that's what happens, I guess, Eric, to many people. When there's so much instant demand, immediate demand, they wind up on a list?
I mean, it's hard for me to know how long it's taking them to actually deliver money to victims. You know, they assert that this $200 million has already been approved for distribution to approximately 50,000 people for household assistance.
Mm-hmm.
As of a day or so ago. You know, in your individual case, I'm sorry, you know, I don't know
right.
what might be holding up the distribution of that money. And the short-term solution, if you're really in a really bad place, is perhaps to turn to the American Red Cross and one of the shelters where you can get, you know, you can stay temporarily, you can get food and water and, you know, eat and or some other private assistance.
There's some possible tips. I hope one of those helps you. Good luck to you. And then is there an assessment process, Eric, where FEMA determines, well, this wasn't really an uninhabitable home. It wasn't convenient, but this person didn't actually need to leave, or they did need to leave. Is there something like that goes on that leaves people at risk?
There is. There's something that they call, you know, it's clawback. I mean, they will follow up, and in many cases, hopefully in most cases, to see whether or not the claim was legitimate. And if they determine that a person, you know, did not properly describe their conditions and unjustifiably got money, then they will request the money back. But FEMA actually does a pretty bad job of collecting that. There's something like, last year there was something like $600 million outstanding in payments that were made to Katrina victims from 2005 that FEMA had concluded were unjustified, that it had not collected.
We see that, somebody wrote on our comments page that FEMA asked for a Social Security number. Do you know if non-citizens are eligible or undocumented people?
I don't. I mean, FEMA now, since Katrina, is attempting to do a great deal more to prevent people from making duplicate claims on fake properties, because there was hundreds of millions of dollars in fraud after
mm-hmm.
Katrina in 2005.
Yeah.
So one of the things they do is to collect things like Social Security number, address, and they use databases to try to make sure that this is a real person and that a single person isn't submitting multiple claims. But I'm not sure actually what the rules are regarding U.S. citizens and non-U.S. citizens.
And
I presume that everyone is eligible, but I'm not sure.
Cindy, before you go, the mayor's appointee, Brad Gare, says the city is preparing an inventory of transitional and temporary housing options. What housing stock is he talking about in a city that doesn't have many vacant apartments ever?
Right. It is very hard to find this. I mean, we have to remember that before the storm hit, there's 46,000 homeless people that were in shelters, record numbers, and those people, it was already difficult to find where those people were going to go. So, yes, you're right. It is a very hard place to find housing for these people. Like I said, you know, some will stay in hotels. Maybe there will be trailers. That still remains to be seen. You know, when the shelter system gets a lot of people in it and they need to find beds quickly, they often turn to landlords who have apartments in their building that they'll rent to the city. So I don't know. That could also be an option as well.
WNYC Cindy Rodriguez, Eric Lipton for The New York Times. As I said at the beginning, this is not the only conversation we'll have about the housing recovery effort. We'll stay on it. Later in the program, we will talk to an insurance expert to give you advice on dealing with your insurance company if you have private insurance and you have damage. And tomorrow, how to handle your children's displacement from their usual school. So we'll keep staying on all of this. Cindy and Eric, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. And New Jersey Public Radio. Coming up next, New York's one-term wonders, why three first-term congresswomen, one Democrat and two Republicans, lost their seats in Tuesday's election, all to men. Stay with us.